making trading your captain an annual Christmas tradition. It's That's So MLS, a North American soccer podcast with myself, Andrew Bates, and Nick Thornton.
Yes, live and in person.
Yes, finally, after weeks and weeks, we found ourselves in the same location here in Vancouver.
Yeah, I like it.
It's a fun time. How was your Happy New Year? How were your holidays?
Holidays were good. It's great. I mean, it sucks to not have any MLS, but one thing I'd forgotten about the holidays is that there's usually at least three Premier League games a week. And so I watched a lot of just like Watford versus Crystal Palace and Burnley versus Stoke and just bottom tier teams playing each other, which is great.
Let the Southampton wash over you.
I don't follow Premier League as much anymore because I used to really follow Arsenal and I, for Arsenal reasons, stopped following them as closely, but it's just nice to watch soccer, especially over the holidays.
That's true. I say every year that I like the MLS's. The MLS schedule does not match up with the European schedule because it means there's soccer all the time.
Right.
But I do find that since I've gotten more in MLS, I sometimes do appreciate the break, and it doesn't mean that I 100% switch. I don't switch right back into being every week.
No, because you're a Spurs fan, aren't you?
That's correct.
Yeah.
So it's
you know what's really weird is I feel compelled to look at my screen when I'm talking to you because it just out of habit.
Yes, you're looking for the Skype bubble.
Your voice, but I can't see you on my computer.
You're looking for the Skype bubble.
Yeah, exactly. Or waiting for the like half second delay before responding to things.
Yeah, no, the this is weird. The connection is so much better.
Right? You're coming through so clear right now.
Yeah, that's great. So the big news that broke, we're recording this on Wednesday, and the big news that broke today is that the New York Red Bulls have traded Sasha Kljestan and Tam to Orlando.
Yeah.
For their...
Is Rivas...
MVP, I think, yes.
Yeah, Rivas and some other bloke.
Mm-hmm.
A defender.
Yes.
Apologies, defender from Orlando, but you didn't have a great year, any of you. Sorry, not sorry. I'm not going to Google you.
So it's kind of like this comes, as I noted at the top of the program, a year after they traded Dax McCarthy, and I feel like that was a strange... Nobody could really understand why that move was being made for formation reason or otherwise.
Yeah.
It seems like people are a little bit less shocked about this. What was your thought on it?
Yeah, I haven't seen too many people's reactions to it. My reaction was not one of total shock. He's an older player, and I get wanting to move him on in favor of bringing in some younger talent. I get it from Orlando's perspective, because Sasha Kljestan is the assist king. He's a player that I think a lot of people love to hate. I've hated him for a long time, and this is the season that I kind of was just like, similar to Michael Bradley, I was like, yeah, you can hate him all you want. He's a fantastic player. He's hands down one of the best midfielders in the MLS. So for Orlando, for any team really, short of trading a Giovinco for him,
yes,
it's whatever you need to give to get him, if you can afford him, is absolutely worth it. My question becomes, with another trade from Orlando, or possible trade, impending trade, who does Sasha connect with? Because I think one of the things that's been so potent is his connection with Bradley Wright Phillips. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he's played with the New York Red Bulls for so long.
Right.
He works really well in their system, is such a linchpin. From the Red Bulls' perspective, you know, Rivas is fine. He's a serviceable striker. He's young. He'll likely improve. It seems like kind of an interesting move, but sometimes, you know, a change is just what a team needs to shake things up, and I don't know if Kljestan had anything to do with the trade, but I think it's a fantastic deal for Orlando.
When they came, if you look at the last couple of games they had in the playoffs, which is, of course, not the best way to rate a team's entire year,
mm-hmm.
but no key player was really able to deliver in a way that would allow them to succeed. So if you look at the makeup of the team and you think, well, we can maybe shake things up a little bit by that, maybe. And you can free up a little bit of room. That's one thing I've been hearing is that in terms of free agent signings, we're still not close, really, to seeing anything like the full outlay of what people are trying to make in terms of signings.
Yeah.
For who Kleshtun will work with in Orlando, I did notice that they re-signed Don Dwyer.
Yeah.
So I think that that is probably a good, that's a good sign. And he's not necessarily somebody who maybe is going to be your number one attacker all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But as a, it's a pairing of two classic MLS players.
Yeah, know, no, Dwyer you're exactly right. And I sort of forgot about that. And, you know, Dom Dwyer had success at Sporting KC, as we know. And I think another player that kind of needed just a change of scenery. But, yeah, I think for me, it's if you look at Kaká, Larin, or Kleshtun Dwyer as your combo, your midfield striker combo, the latter is a pretty tasty option.
It's true.
Like,
yeah.
That's a, as you said, that's a lot of MLS experience. It's a lot to be putting on the books, but Kleshtun certainly has better output than Kaká. I mean, obviously he's retired, RIP. But
retire in peace?
Yeah. Well, I think RIP, retire in peace in soccer terms just means you go to MLS.
So, oh. But,
and I get, like, I do get it from, you know, Kleshtun, he's what, 33? 32?
Yeah, I would assume.
So, you know, he doesn't have a lot of years left in him, but he had another fantastic year. I don't know the exact stats over the year before, but there's no reason to suggest he wouldn't have another good year, but it seems like Orlando is doing what they need to do to really reshape things, which isn't completely clear the decks. They've got some good foundations, but you know, they had some players on the books that were costing a lot of money and really not having the output. One of those players is Kyle Larin.
You were talking about people that maybe need a little change of scenery. And Larin has been surrounded by rumors for where he's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
You were telling me there is a new one coming out that he might be heading to Germany.
Indeed. But you're the only one that can pronounce the team name. Which is
Borussia Mönchengladbach.
Yeah, them. They're great.
You could just say Gladbach for short.
Gladbach.
I know them because that's where Canadian national team striker Rob Friend plied his trade.
Yes.
In the late 2000s after he left Heerenveen. And he was from, I spent a time in Kelowna. He's from Kelowna, B.C., or had lived in Kelowna, B.C. as well. So so he was well known as sort of the local soccer player, did good.
Right. And had, it seems like, two or three okay years in Germany and not much else, but...
That was the era. It was the era for the Canadian men's national team where, you know, if you had somebody that was up or at or near the European...
Yeah. He plays for Cyprus. He's a king. He's a god.
Love me some Rob Friend. So hopefully the presence of, if he was to go to, if he was to go to Gladbach, it's been a great place for Canadians before. Hopefully it could be, I think the next stage of his career, it would be helpful to have, I don't know if competition is the right word, but like a little more accountability because it seemed like it was rough.
Yeah.
It was rough in terms of, you know, having to, it seemed like a mentally rough year for Kyle Larin.
Yeah. And I mean, ultimately he's responsible for himself and certainly it wasn't a banner year for MLS players in terms of behavior off the pitch. I mean,
especially MLS players in Orlando.
Yeah, like, exactly. Especially them. For Larin, you know, the other thing I wonder is, too, is I think that it's so easy to forget how... I don't think there's as much community at sports clubs as we often think. Like, these aren't babysitters, right? These are young dudes who are told they're brilliant, get paid a ton of money overnight. Even in MLS terms, Kyle Larin is making a ton of money for a boy. He's 22, 23?
Well, he had that year where he was an MLS near top scorer or top scorer. And,
yeah.
And once you're anointed as that kind of star, it's hard to have, it's hard to come back from that.
Yeah.
And have a less, a year where you're being compared to it.
Exactly. And much like, you know, kids moving away to go to university, it's like there's no parents, you know, there's no club handler really that's looking after people. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of, I forget the name of it, but the documentary about, Ibrahimovic, and it's all about his
Zlatan.
Yes, but all about his younger years, and it's kind of fascinating because it's so starkly sad because so much of it is him sitting at home alone playing video games because he has no friends, he has no life, and it's sort of opened my eyes to the fact, like, I think that's true for a lot of soccer players for a lot of their careers. Unless they have families, it really is, you're traveling so much, you know, you've got your teammates, but really it's a lot of time sitting in hotel rooms, waiting to play. You know, yes, there's a lot of practice and stuff like that, but there's no one making you build a life outside of soccer, which isn't to excuse Laren or anybody else, but I agree. I think as a young player, you need some sort of guidance or system, and I think that accountability in a European club where it's really like, you're just gone. Like, I mean, you're either traded or, you know, you're literally not even coming into training, which even Orlando, I think, did with Laren at one point. But we've seen the benefits of players going to clubs where the expectation is incredibly high, and you literally will not set foot on a pitch unless you're performing at top, top levels.
I don't know what Laren's age is off the top of my head, and I know that he's not at that young player. He's not exactly at that young player stage, but
yeah.
When I was at the Canada-Jamaica press conference that we've spoken about before on the podcast. Speaking of old Canadian national team players.
He's 22, I got it right.
22, right? So I was talking to Paul Stalteri about, who is a former captain, about the differences in development from what he went through versus what people are going through now.
Hmm.
And the number one thing that he was talking about was the amount of games and the amount of, like, work that you have to do to basically get in the first team, where he was saying that, like 22 is more around the age that you would get into a Bundesliga first team.
Mm-hmm.
He was saying, that, or at least when he was doing it, that you would work for the youth team, and there's no being a first teamer at age 18 or 19.
No. No, and I think that that is a really helpful thing for people to keep in perspective. As we've talked about with Alphonso Davies, the idea that a 16-year-old is going to go play in Manchester United's first team is ludicrous. It's one in a million, even within Europe. It just really doesn't happen that way.
Mm-hmm.
And, players who are getting their chance in the first team, it does happen recently, like an 18, 19-year-old, but...
Mm.
More likely, as you say, it's 22, 23 that you're starting to see. And I think people forget that, even about Messi. I mean, Messi was 22, 23 before he started regularly appearing for Barcelona.
Mm-hmm.
And this is soccer Jesus wizard.
And we're talking about a player in Laren who has, like, already, before age 22, had a peak in decline. Like, this is...
Yeah.
It's almost a machine in the way.
And I think a lot of managers in Europe... And not that it doesn't happen in North America, but I think European managers are a little better built to deal with some of the personalities as well. That it really is about, you know, Ibrahimovic still gets benched because of attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And that a coach is not afraid to bench their best player if they're acting up and just simply saying, you know, like, it doesn't matter who you are, but if you're showing up late to practice, you can be scoring 30 goals. But if you start screwing up off the pitch, you know, you're going to be on the bench.
Yeah.
And we've seen that happen time and time again in Europe, not just at the top clubs, but there's, I think, a slightly different work ethic and a little bit more of a team atmosphere, where I think in MLS, it's just so hard when you've got somebody on the books for $500,000 in salary. As a team, you really can't afford to do much more than punish them for one match before you go or move them on. Right,
yeah.
Like, you need your star players and the players you're paying a lot of money to be on the pitch, because you've got a squad built out of guys who are getting paid, you know, $29,000 a year and $50,000 a year.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. Well, Orlando did bench Kaká that one time.
Yeah, that's true. They did. Yeah.
But it's the imbalance is tough in the Tam Gam era. Maybe that could kind of ease things up in terms of I say the imbalance between DPs and non-DPs. You see that a little bit in the Whitecaps. Whether or not you think that the Whitecaps' use of DP spots as ways to hide, like, players that are barely Gam-Tam players,
mm-hmm.
whether or not that's a good idea, I don't know. But, like, it shows that in a team like that, there's kind of a less stark curve.
Yeah, and I think what we're beginning to see is MLS, an era of MLS teams that are building a little bit more through the middle rather than having the stark difference of top and bottom players, where you've got, you have your $1 million, $3 million signings, and then a whole bunch of players who are like sort of bottom rung and hoping things work out. And as much as I'll catch flack for this, but no tea spill just happened. The Whitecaps have done, I think, a good job of building that middle base and then trying to add pieces to it to augment it, rather than look to have big-name signings, put all the effort and money there. Because, again, you know, a player like Kamara is still a big personality.
Yes.
And if you focus, if you put everything on him to do all of the work, I don't necessarily think it's going to work out. You need other options. And so I think having a player like, is it Blundell? Anthony Blundell coming in, I think is a great option. You have a young, exciting South American talent to help offset that, right? That you can afford to, not that I think Kamara's going to act up, like I'm not saying he's a problem, but, you know, he's a guy that speaks his mind, and he's also a guy that is going to need rests. He's not a player that's going to play every single match. We know that. I like that system better than trying to put the focus where your star striker, your star midfielder needs to play every single match or lose.
I know not a lot of people. I know some people are not as agreed on whether or not Breck Shea was a success. But I think that the way they handled him in terms of not making him the focus.
Yeah.
I think they did get the best. The Whitecaps got the best utilization out of Shea. Using that method.
I agree. I think, everyone was a little bit unsure about what, if anything, he would do at the Whitecaps. And I think most of us still are. I've seen him play fantastically, and I've seen games where I'm just head in hands screaming at him. But he's not playing every minute. He's not playing every game. And despite the fact that I think he's my neighbor... I've still got questions about him, but I think he's been managed well. I do think Carl Robinson does a good job of managing personalities and letting players know what the expectation is. And performance is ultimately king. That's much easier to do when there's a little bit more parity in contracts on a team.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether it's just you're resting a player because of their age or risk of injury, or it's more of a disciplinary thing, I think a system where performance is what speaks the most works much better. And in Europe, that's really hard to get around. It doesn't matter who you are.
Yeah.
If there's a player above you that's doing better and showing up to practice more often than you are, showing up on time and not acting out, they're going to get their chance. And you are going to be down at the bottom. And we've seen the top, top star players in Europe end up training with the youth team because... like Balotelli comes to mind.
Bastian Schweinsteiger.
Yeah, you get sent down the rungs, and it's not meant to be a punishment as such. It's just this is where you belong. These kids are showing up every day to practice on time and doing the work. You're going to learn how to do that with them.
So that mentality could be really helpful for Kyle Larin. I was a little sad because I loved the rumor. About him potentially going to Besiktas, to not only because you could have the chance, he could have the chance of working together with Atiba Hutchinson of the Canadian men's national team, but also because I wanted them to make another one of those come to Besiktas videos
yeah.
with
I think that was my 2017 like social media highlight of a soccer club of the fact that the team got on board with it of just like come to Besiktas, everybody.
If I haven't gushed about this before, this is a series of videos that you can find where that have atrocious editing and sound, but sometimes somehow make it where a bunch of players they sign in the offseason, you have one player at the team in a split screen, hold up a cell phone, and with absolutely wooden acting, be like, hey.
Hey, come to Besiktas.
And then, like, it would, a huge, like, Euro dance, like, oots, oots, would start playing with, like...
It's like a messy chip commercial where you're just like, oh, God, no, why is he...
And then they would bring the music down, and they would have the other player be like, hello, I'm coming to Besiktas. And then they would go right back. They would go right back to the... to the Euro dance, and I want that so badly.
Yeah.
But I tweeted that, and I did have that BKC fan on Twitter did reply to me to say it's not likely.
Yeah. No, now it seems, I mean, apparently at this point it's still a rumor, but I think we can safely say Laren's not going to Besiktas. And apparently also, and speaking of Canadians at Besiktas, Atiba Hutchinson has been linked to Montreal Impact as of late. Mm-hmm. The last I saw is that they had held talks. So there seems to be some truth to the rumor. There's been rumors circulating for the last couple of years. I think most of it has been put up by Whitecaps supporters rather than any real legitimate source. But I think we can safely
just
say
dreams and hopes.
Atiba Hutchinson will not be coming to the Whitecaps, it doesn't seem.
Well, if this... He's always such an interesting question mark, Atiba, because he's got so much talent and he's been so valuable for the Canadian men's program for so long.
Mm-hmm.
He's approaching some of the final years of his career.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to play in MLS before he's done. Mm-hmm. You know all these things.
Yeah.
But the how you get from the situation where we are now, where Atiba is a contributor in a valued part of a team in the Champions League.
Yeah.
To a position where he is being a positive contributor in the MLS, but not overshadowing or creating an issue.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard people that say they don't... some people wonder whether or not Atiba would work because of, you know, age and speed differences.
Yeah.
It's weird to say that you don't know whether or not a player who is like a Champions League regular can work in MLS. But also the question is whether or not it's better for Canada or better for Atiba for him to spend a couple more years in Europe. Because, I mean, I guess at this point he's earned whatever. I mean, I guess what's better for Canada? Doesn't matter because it's like he is...
It's also different systems. I think people forget that. It's different styles of play. I mean, the Turkish League, sure, it's a competitive European side. And yes, they do well in Champions League, and Atiba's obviously had great success there. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it's fundamentally a different league. And, you know, we saw with Pirlo. Like, Pirlo's a genius. A soccer genius.
Yes.
I physically saw him eat shit in MLS matches this year because he was just too old, too slow.
Yeah.
And, you know, it wasn't that his passing was off. It's just that a younger, fitter, stronger player can muscle him off the ball and close him down.
Yeah. That,
take, you know, Pirlo's Pirlo, still did fantastically, but I saw him struggle in games because the style of play is very different. And even as Schweinsteiger said when he came to MLS, you're not surrounded by the same talent. It's why Messi stays in Spain and stays with Barcelona because he fits with Barcelona. If he goes and plays for Man United, he's not going to produce the same amount of goals because it's a fundamentally entirely different team.
Yeah.
It's players he doesn't have chemistry with. It wouldn't make sense. Mm-hmm. Why would Messi at this point in his career want to, you know, all of a sudden sink to only scoring 25 goals in a season instead of, you know, 120 million or whatever his usual record. Like geography matters. leagues matter in the league system around you. There, of course, are great players that can switch leagues and do well in any league, but I don't think it's always the top players. I don't see where Atiba Hutchinson fits in with most MLS sides. I think Montreal Impact is possibly the exception, where they do play a little bit of a more slow build in the attack, where Atiba could be perhaps more effective.
Yeah, because then you can get Atiba kind of playing almost as a second striker, pushing the ball up.
Yeah, and so you know, and Jackson
Amel and
Piatti.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I go. That makes a little bit more sense. And the Whitecaps would be like, "What's he going to play next to Laba?" Like this doesn't, you know.
Yeah, we may not see Matias Laba because I feel like he didn't have his option may have expired, and I don't know that they've re-signed him yet.
They haven't re-signed him yet. I think the word on this, the what I've seen seems positive that they're in negotiation with him. Obviously, he had the ACL injury this year, which kept him out of the squad.
Uh-huh.
I haven't seen too much official about where that's going. However, there's at least via social media, there still seems to be quite a bit of talk about Laba, and he's talked about the Whitecaps. I judge most things by trying to follow Whitecaps players on Instagram and see what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
One interesting note was that I think he spent New Year's or some of the holidays with our old friend Sebastian Fernandez.
Oh!
Who I believe is playing in Uruguay now. However, I think in that post there was still mention of Whitecaps, like, mm-hmm. and there's. I wouldn't start rumors that Matias Laba is leaving necessarily.
Right.
I don't know. I have a feeling that he's a player that the Whitecaps will want to keep around, even though he'll be coming off the injury.
Mm-hmm.
They also didn't pick up the option for Noza Igibor this year, who was the sort of late Laba replacement. I feel like, there'll be some movement, but I think that Laba is just such a critical piece. Even if he isn't quite fully fit at the beginning of the season, his fitness is much better. It seems like the injury he's mostly recovered from. And if they are able to renegotiate at the right price, I don't see the Whitecaps taking the risk of losing him to another MLS side.
Speaking of feverishly checking a player's social media accounts.
Yes.
Freddie Montero still has Whitecaps in his bio.
Oh, interesting.
He has X, Sounders, X, all these teams that he's played for, Tianjin.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's got Whitecaps with no X modifier. So...
Hmm.
He's posted Happy New Year pictures with pictures of him celebrating the Whitecaps uniform and stuff like that. So the methods by which Montero would be able to return are not immediately clear because, if I recall, he's still under contract to his Chinese club.
He is, yeah.
But he seems to be walking the walk at this point that he is a Whitecaps player.
Right. But I guess another question then is like, given the addition of Kamara and Blundell, and the fact that Hurtado's option was picked up and he's staying.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, Hurtado plays also on the wing, but is sort of considered a striker. They have three strikers without Montero. At this point, do they need him? Especially considering the price. Now, the main thing here is, now, and we know that if you've been keeping track, at least I think, the Whitecaps have some money in the bank in terms of what they can spend on players, both for transfer fees and for from various sales. Like this year, it felt like they weren't spending as much as they have in the past on players.
Mm-hmm.
I still think Montero's price tag is mighty big. And again, for a player that did well, but... Kamara was a free transfer and is higher salary. But Montero, we're looking at in the 1 to 1.3 million range for a player that has scored, like, we know Kamara can score 11 goals a season.
Yeah.
So at this point, I think Kamara was like an insurance policy. But I'm sort of like, where does Montero fit in? now that they've finally got their strong forward that can stand in the middle.
I feel like you've got to have strikers in from a practical perspective. When you say, like, you know, there's now 3 or 4 strikers, it's like, I hate the Whitecaps strategy, which they have gone to more than time and again, of sending a single striker to the moon.
Yeah,
and it's like, for me, if signing Montero means we have the team has 4 strikers, that means that they have to play strikers. That's good.
Yeah. We could play 2 strikers instead of 1 constantly.
If this forces them to put more strikers on the pitch, I'm all for it.
I agree. But under the current Whitecaps system and the formations they play, I find it very hard to believe that Rob was going to take away 2 wingers to play 2 strikers. I mean, in theory, you could have Montero playing in behind Kamara, but I don't know. Something to me says Montero is not coming back. It's too much money I think he was very necessary last season to get us where we got to, and brought a level of consistency we haven't had in a really long time.
Mm.
But I feel like having a bit of competitiveness between Hurtado and Blondell for time, with knowing that you've got Kamara who can just sort of crank it out. I do agree they'll probably have a 4th striker, but whether or not you want that to be, again, a player that's going to cost you $1.5 million and not play every single match, which, I don't know that that's necessarily the thing that's going to happen.
It's also important to note that, like, Montero has been a controversial presence in the side because of... I was kind of ready to be done with Montero, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because of the permanency issues, because of the Seattle issues, because of the issues of his legal, the legal issues that he got into when he was in Seattle.
Yeah.
Really turned some people off.
Yeah.
And it's hard to say that that's not totally... and it is totally valid to be turned off by that.
Yeah.
And it is... I kind of was breathing a little bit of a sigh of relief. Obviously, you don't want to lose... You don't want to lose a good player, but, and Montero is what the Whitecaps needed last year, but I was kind of ready to move on to a Montero-less feature.
Yeah, and I very much am, and that's why I was... Part of the reason why I was thrilled for the Kamara signing is I was like, okay, so we have our 10-goal striker. We don't need a character like Montero. Mm-hmm. And regardless of what happened or what didn't happen in Seattle, Vancouver, as with other clubs, has really struggled with some pretty shady characters. And I say, let's clean house and move on. And I mean, obviously that should take priority, but at this point I would say we don't need Montero. And I'm very ready for a Montero-less future. Speaking in very practical terms, if I'm making the decisions, I'm going, I got a player for free who can score as many goals. Why would I be negotiating with a Chinese club with deep pockets that wants top dollar for Montero?
Yeah.
He's on loan, so we don't own his MLS rights. He's likely not going to another MLS club. We've already competed against him in another MLS club. So let him go and maybe, you know, some Danish club picks him up or something, but so what?
Yeah.
You know, he did what he came to do. He had a good season, but I think I hope that there's a bit of a tide shifting in MLS where it's just like, do we need this?
Yeah.
Do we need this just sort of darkness around a player?
One player that is moving on from Vancouver, and I think it's very sad, is Jordan Harvey has signed for LAFC as a designated player, or not as a designated player, sorry. He signed for as a free agent, is what I meant to say.
Yes.
And I think this is sad for a lot of... This is sad for a lot of people, which is interesting for me, because I felt like he spent the early years of his tenure with the Vancouver Whitecaps trying to prove himself.
Yeah.
And perhaps being a player that...
Had this argument with Ricardo, too? In 2014?
Yes. Our friend Ricardo Bordalom. It's he was overused at first, and then he came to he aged and matured to become a really valuable part of the side.
Yeah,
he will be a valuable part of the LAFC side, but it is hard to see a player like that who's been such a stalwart player for Vancouver.
Yeah,
move on.
It is an I mean, especially when you think about there's now one player left on the Whitecaps who's part of the original MLS squad, Demerit. Tybert and Harvey were the players, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Obviously, Demerit's retired. Tybert is re-signed, so he's still with the club. I love Jordan Harvey. I've always thought he was great. I've had many arguments with people who smashed him, and I've said some ill things about him this season in some of the performances. He's been, I mean, everything about his career stats speak for themselves, especially the last couple of years at Whitecaps. I mean, he's started virtually every minute of every Whitecaps match, almost without exception.
He was on the bench in the playoffs, wasn't he?
Yes. I think it's the right move from the Whitecaps and for LAFC. And at the same time, with, like, take nothing away from what Jordan Harvey has done or my appreciation as a fan and what he's done for the club. But I think it's definitely time for him to move on. And I think LAFC is getting a fantastic left back with a ton of experience who's going to make them a serious expansion side club instead of just a, oh, we got Carlos Vela and that's a big signing. And you're like, yeah, well, Vela will come in and score 10 goals, but he's not going to be incredible. You know, he's a great player. I've always liked him, former Arsenal player.
Yes.
But, you know, these star signings that LAFC has that everyone's talking about, I go, but when you look at bringing in a player like Jordan Harvey, that shows that you actually are serious because you're getting a player with a ton of experience, ton of leadership qualities,
yeah,
a great character. He's from California. He's going back home. It makes sense. And we've got De Jong, and we've got Adekube back this season. I think De Jong earned his spot over Jordan Harvey in the playoffs, and we started to see, through no fault of Jordan Harvey's, just a bit of a decline there, and just the fitness wasn't quite there, the sharpness wasn't quite there. I have full faith in De Jong and Adekube. They may yet bring in someone else, but I think they're probably looking more so for a suitable right back to challenge development of Nowinski a little bit. But I go, we've got two great left backs, one with experience, one who's young but now has some European experience. We've got what we need, and the reality would be if Harvey stayed, he wouldn't be playing as many games, so it wouldn't be fair to Harvey, and I think a lot of the fans would be upset. But everyone calls out Rabo for not properly developing youth players. Well, Adekube did great while he was with the Whitecaps. We saw glimmers of what he could do.
Yeah.
And actually, he's a pretty Harvey-esque left back. Has been in England for the last 2 years, I believe, on loan.
Yeah, he was in Brighton for a bit.
Yeah.
And had an injury out there and had to come back.
Yeah. But did well there during his time and was on the first team. Has some great English experience now. English championship experience. So I say, you know, with him and De Jong sort of battling it out or sharing duties, as it were, maybe you draft another rookie or bring somebody up from the academy. But as much as it's, you know, it's hard not to make these things personal or be upset about it, especially somebody like Jordan Harvey that is like, you think of him as the Whitecaps. I think it's an okay move. I'm sad to see him go, but I think, like most Whitecaps supporters, when we face LAFC and Jordan Harvey steps into BC Place, he'll receive a nice warm standing ovation, and we'll thank him for his time, and no hard feelings. And I think he's where he wants to be, and the Whitecaps are where they want to be. I think the situation was handled for once properly. Like, it's not, it's an amicable split.
It's not the Whitecaps trading somebody out from underneath them.
It doesn't feel like a breakup. It feels like it's a sad, like, thank you and so long, but it would be, I think to me it would be much sadder if Jordan Harvey was retiring. But he's not. He's going to go to an expansion side, and regardless of how LAFC does next year, they are getting one of the best, most consistent left backs in the league.
Mm.
Who's going to provide a lot of leadership experience to them, and that's going to be his legacy project. And that's going to, you know, if that's the club he retires with, I think that's great mm-hmm. for him and for the club.
It is a goodbye to old familiar friends as the Whitecaps traded David Ustedt's piece of paper to DC for other pieces of paper.
Yeah.
And there'll be turnover, but hopefully it will be positive ones. You mentioned,
but is Ustedt with DC now?
Well, he hasn't signed. So right. It's like, this is one where you trade. It's like a player who is going to become, because I don't believe he was selected in, I think he is now a free agent because he wasn't selected in this, in the
right. Because he was sort of aged out of the new system where if you're a player of a certain age, you can be bought down with TAM or GAM. But mm-hmm. because he's older, he can't be. So he's sort of in no man's land.
So I think he has to wait through to the free agent period. This gets DC the rights to first negotiate with him. Mm-hmm. But I think if nobody signs, he won't become a free agent. And I think he... I wouldn't be surprised if he did sign with DC and just went to the 3-day period.
I have another prediction.
What's your prediction?
Because there was also rumors around Galaxy. I would not be entirely surprised if he ends up at LAFC or LA Galaxy.
That's true, because LA has a rough situation, if I recall.
Yeah. Yeah. And both teams are in need of a good goalkeeper.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, both teams clearly have deep pockets and are a little bit less concerned. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ustedt would be great at DC.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling... especially now with the Harvey connection. I mean, the MLS is kind of like the mafia. Like, it's all who you know. We've seen players follow teammates around. I mean, okay, former teammate Darren Maddox is at DC.
Yeah.
So you could say that's a connection. But I find some part of me feels like with Harvey at LAFC, is that not some incentive to bring in David Ustedt? I don't believe LAFC currently has any goalkeepers on the books.
No.
Unless it's recent.
I think they actually got Seattle's backup goalkeeper in the expansion draft.
I can't oh, yeah, I think you're right, yeah. However, you still go... The expansion side is maybe a little bit more willing to play fast and loose with the salaries of players. And knowing that Ustedt's record in MLS, again, if they want to be serious, if I'm LA and depending on other pieces of the squad, I go, why wouldn't you take a player like Ustedt with some age, some experience? He's playing with a former teammate. Why not?
Are you suggesting that Harvey is going to pick up his phone and go, hey, David, come to see us?
It can happen. It's just, it doesn't have the same ring to it because LAFC just has the worst name in MLS.
Do they have a nickname yet? Is it the red and gold or something? Or the black and gold? Or the black
I mean, that's
red
like sort of their motto, but like they're just LAFC.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm really excited for in the Whitecaps preseason is they're going to play the new USL team in Las Vegas, the Las Vegas Lights.
Oh.
I felt really nailed it on their... name, logo, brand identity reveal.
Is it just a light?
It's like a neon light. It's like the diamond.
So it's not like a...
The diamond welcome to LA sign, but an outline.
It's not a Las Vegas Golden Knights. It's like just a light.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's not like the Golden Knights have been doing badly, but I feel like they nailed Las Vegas way better than the Golden Knights did.
Yeah, a little bit.
I wanted to note there was this, I had seen it on MLS's website. It was the soccer business. Oh, I can't. I don't have my phone on me, so it's, I don't have the exact name of the business index. Mm. But it was like like the top 100 clubs. And of the top 50, there were four MLS clubs in there, ranked by their key business indicators. and the key business indicators were kindest. To LA, Seattle, Portland was in the 50 to 100, and New England was in there. Is one of the was one of the four teams as well. So it was who was the New York Red Bulls? It was Seattle, New York Red Bulls, L.A. and New England were in the top 50 teams in the world. And the key business indicators they were considering were squad value, tangible assets, potential investment of owners, cash in hand, and net debt.
Hmm.
And a lot of the MLS teams that did well had a very similar profile in terms of their business, which would make sense because it's a single entity. And that would be that they all had, compared to the teams around them in the index, they all had very low squad values in their index. They all had high tangible assets, and they didn't have debt. And not all of them were at zeros in the possible investment in the future. Sporting Kansas City did in the Sector 500, but that's the kind of value profile right now for an MLS team in the context of the broader world. Is an MLS team does not have as much debt. An MLS team has high tangible assets, whether or not they own their stadium, as the Rebs do, which is, I think, what, because Gillette owns owns the Rebs?
Yeah.
Bob Kraft, and owns Gillette Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
So they have high tangible assets, or performance centers will also get you high on the list. And the squad values are kept way low compared to other teams of similar financial worth on this index.
Hmm.
This is something that we could consider as the league is going to change its makeup a little bit as they announce that Nashville will be joining up. What do you think of the selection? Both the selection of Nashville and the announcement that the next team, the second team selected out of the four, they will sit on that for a while longer.
you just told me about earlier. So that's news to me. Not the Nashville thing. That came out, I think, a few days after we did our last episode. Mm-hmm. The Nashville thing was very surprising to me. I know that there's been so much talk about MLS and Miami and trying to get things over the line. And MLS has been very vocal about really trying to help Miami get things over the line. Whatever that means. I have no idea how or why or what the interactions are, but MLS is...
The stadium issue, if I recall?
Yeah, I think so. It's very unclear about how all of that pans out or what their main concerns are, at least beyond a very nebulous, vague, foggy way. They're like, it's a stadium issue. And you're like, what do you mean by that, sir? Nashville was a surprise. I know nothing about its soccer culture, to be fair. So, congratulations, Nashville. I hope that there's a large fan base that's very excited to support their club. A little surprising. The delay on the second team to join is a little surprising. However, I wonder if it has something to do with everyone that has been talking about Miami being the shoe-in for the next team. And it was announced this week or last that... FC Cincinnati is now up to 17,000 season's ticket holders and looking at a new stadium. With or without MLS, I believe they're still looking at a new soccer-specific stadium for FC Cincinnati.
Yeah.
So I still, all of my feelings about FC Cincinnati aside, which mostly has to do with allegiances to the great coach, Alan Coach, I think that might be some of the delay, is that Miami's been the shoe-in, but FC Cincinnati has the numbers backing it up.
Yeah.
It's not just about potential, it's about they actually have a base. I think that's what helped Minnesota so much.
Uh-huh.
Minnesota? Yes.
Yes.
Just in a moment where I was like, that doesn't sound like an MLS team.
Some of these expansion teams, I still feel like they're expansion teams. I saw today that the player that Orlando signed had been there since their first season in 2014. I'm like, it's been that long?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Like, I still think Orlando is an expansion side.
Mm. They do love their deep-pocketed owners, the MLS Board of Governors do.
Yeah.
I've heard that there may be issues in Sacramento in terms of that they may have had everything lined up and then a major investor dropped out, and now they're looking at like the 11th hour basically for another investor,
yeah,
which is a real tough time for that to happen to you.
It is, yeah. I mean, and admittedly, I've sort of fallen a little bit out of touch with the Save the Crew movement.
Yeah.
I think just out of general pettiness, I would like the Crew to stay in Columbus. That being said, I mean, everything about the MLS backroom dealings is just so obscure, and really it is an old boys club, it seems. Like the key business indicators, as you said, seems to really come down to, does the ownership have deep, deep pockets? which is why I think Osted might end up at LAFC.
That's true. That is the most... Just bundles of cash is the most important key business indicator of all.
Yeah, truly. And, I mean, the funny thing is that MLS for so long has prided itself in that it's different and there's salary caps and all of that. And I do think that matters. There's much more parity in MLS than there is in most leagues around the world. And I like that. Mm. I would much rather a DC United comes in next season, blows everybody out of the water, and wins MLS Cup, then watch Bundesliga or La Liga any season. Because it's not a competition.
No.
It's really not. It's great soccer when it comes off right. Everybody wants to watch El Clasico, but if you hear Barcelona blew out Malaga 5-0, you're like, all right, well, maybe it's because they own most of Spain, and the other club is just a bunch of really good Spanish guys, but they're like not good enough to beat a team that's worth, you know, $500 million.
It's hard when the social strata basically determines what the result is.
Exactly. And then it's even the same for the Premier League, although it's evened out a little bit in recent years. You still go like, oh, really? Man City's, you know, what, 43 points? Not quite that at this point, but by season's end they might be. But, you know, I like that there's salary. So it makes sense. I feel like MLS is kind of going down the road of they're just obscuring the reality by very complex terms and conditions and TAM and GAM and ownership. Like, it just seems very unclear, which means that it's easier to manipulate. The only exception is that teams don't, for the most part, seem to understand what the rules are. So it makes them, like, because three clubs tried to sign David Osted thinking they could, and then were told by the league they couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
So three teams innocently thought that they were okay and in the clear, and then found out that through various loopholes and rules they couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
That says to me that there's an issue there. However, as we've seen in recent years, we are kind of shifting in the direction of the clubs that can spend the most will do the best. But, and especially with MLS courting ownership that has a shit ton of money.
The nice thing, as we sort of look back on Toronto, is that I think that as much as there's a lot of money that goes into that side, they have proved the sort of Beckham experiment rule, which is that you can't buy your team and have it work in year one.
Yeah.
At the very least, if there's going to be a tie between wages and success, I'm at least happy that there is a certain... You have to put work. You have to put the rubber to the road first. You can't just...
Yeah.
You can't just debut a new lineup and have it clean up.
Yeah. And as much as... you know, people look at Atlanta and they're like, oh, they spent so much money on their coach. It's like, yeah, but the salary cap doesn't apply to your coach. And that was a very smart maneuver because you're getting a coach who understands players and you've got star players, but they could still lose some of their star players. And a coach that did great with players that had been in MLS for a long time. Youth players got the best out of them because you got a really fantastic coach. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just about signing the best players and the big names. They got value for money. And I wonder about, you know, as much as we knock the sort of retirement league concept, is Giovinco was a nobody in Italy. Like, a lot of these players that are the stars that come over to MLS are basically non-entities in their home clubs.
Which is the game. Which is to find the smart eye.
Absolutely. And that, to me, is why MLS continues to be exciting and compelling, is because the PSGs, the Real Madrids, the Man Uniteds, Man Cities, Barcelona's of the world that can spend 225 million euro on one player, at that point you're kind of like, well, what's the game here? What's the competition? It's just outspending to get the best, the biggest name profile player. Mm-hmm. Everyone wants to talk about the Neymar-esque transfers. You know? Like, that is a waste of money to me. Not because of the dollar value assigned to one player. It's value for money. Where you go, if you invested that into a scouting agency and found 225 million euro worth of the best youth players across the globe, imagine the team you could build. And it may not overnight be successful.
Yeah.
But imagine, like, you're talking about money that can build an entire club. Now, granted, they're competing on a different stage and whatever, and it's fine. It's not like it's coming out of taxpayers' pockets. It's billionaires who have nothing better to do with their time. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited by the way MLS finds players that are value for money and are non-entities in their leagues. And it's starting to happen where we're getting them at the ages of 26 and 27 and coming into their prime rather than 34, and it's a big name, and they're going to put bums in seats and sell some shirts. But Almiron was not a known entity when he came to MLS. And he may not stay in MLS, but he's not a star player from his home country necessarily. He's a star player here. Mm-hmm. That's the difference. That's smart scouting. That's smart recruiting. It still costs you a lot of money. But you're not signing. To me, I'd much rather have an Almiron than a Kaká. At this stage in their careers.
What does narrative, and this is what I was thinking of in terms of value for money with a signing like PSG's crazy signing of Neymar. Mm-hmm. Crazy. Is it, what does narrative mean to you, right? Like, what does an achievement mean to you if you move the goalpost by spending so much money that, like, I think this is why Toronto's history does kind of help it get away from people saying, well, they just bought a team. Mm-hmm. They just bought a team and they won it because they spent 4 years trying to buy a team.
Yeah.
They spent their whole history trying to put a team together. But
yeah, we saw that.
Even recently, they pumped in the money and they bought top players and they lost. They bought top players and they lost. They bought top players and they lost. And eventually they put them together. What does it mean to you? And then, and when it's done, they can look back and they can see the achievement after all of these failed attempts of finally coming together as a group. Mm-hmm. What does it even mean as a story if it's just like, yeah, we signed Neymar and then we won the French league because none of them had Neymar and we had Neymar.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Truly. And I think that's still the compelling thing about North American sports in general. Obviously, some leagues excluded, not to make the thing too broad, but that to me is still the compelling thing about North American soccer, is that there is, you know, people can talk about in the Premier League, the Burnleys, and they're like, oh, they're really getting in there, and, you know, they're the giant slayers, and, you know, of course, Leicester's historic win was a big talking point, but in MLS, it's sort of like, it still is anybody's game. And as much as Toronto right now, you're like, oof. Mm-hmm. They've had very little turnover. I'm sure they're going to come back in next season and dominate again. It doesn't mean that another team is out. And it feels just as possible at this moment that DC can reinvent themselves, Colorado can reinvent themselves and come in next season, and they'll be the new Toronto without spending tons and tons and tons of cash, but just buying the right kinds of players that will fit. And in a league where there's a very specific kind of play, it's a fast-paced league, it's a very physical league now, but it also changes every season, and so much depends on what other teams do, not just what your team does, but looking at especially the trades with Orlando, I mean, Orlando is a laughingstock this season, a laughingstock with a lot of potential.
Yeah.
There's some great players, but everybody's kind of like, how is Orlando so bad? And as of right now, and they're surely not done, you go, Orlando's all of a sudden become like a real threat. On paper, they still have to perform, but you would imagine Question and Dwyer combination, like add some rookies around that and maybe one or two pieces with some experience and coaching staff, like all Orlando could come in next season and blow people out of the water, as Atlanta did this season in their first year. So it's anyone's game, which is exciting.
The benefit of not having promotion relegation and having a system like the MLS does is that teams have the opportunity to rebuild.
Yes.
To do a rebuild and think, okay, well, that didn't work.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do instead? And
yeah.
maybe a player through the draft is going to fall into our lap. Compared to a Leicester where the exception proves the rule almost in
yeah.
European leagues when a team like Leicester one wins.
It had to happen sooner or later, and it did.
Mm-hmm. Nobody knows what makes it so miraculous is that nobody starts a season in England being like, well, we were shit last year, but we made this error in our tactics, and we were one or two pieces away.
Yeah.
And now we've added those two pieces, and we've changed our tactics, and we're feeling really good about it.
Yeah.
That will never happen in England, and it's something that can happen in the U.S.,
no.
and that makes it a little easier to be a supporter.
Yeah, exactly. It honestly does, because you can say, hey, we could actually completely change next season and be fantastic. I mean, even from this year, as much disappointment as the Whitecaps finished with, I went, compared to the year before, we got miles better. It wasn't that there wasn't points that were still frustrating, but when, yes, it was disappointing to finish third when we could have finished first, but we were never going to make it very far in the playoffs. And ultimately, you have to go, we built a much better club. We had much higher expectations of our players. We brought in better players. We started to see a team culture shift a little bit.
That yeah.
It wasn't only about sending the ball over the top. Still too much of it, but it changed. So perhaps this is the point to then think ahead. We talked about doing New Year's resolutions. We support
yes.
the same MLS club.
Yes.
So let's do it for the three Canadian teams. Not all the teams, but if you had a New Year's resolution for, and let's start with MLS Cup champs Toronto, what would your resolutions be for Toronto other than change nothing, win the cup again?
Don't lose the fire. I think that the focus on the CONCACAF Champions League, we've seen a little bit last year that it's tough to put a lot of focus on the CONCACAF tournament as it happens early in the season. It has a new schedule this year. They have put a focus in their off-season preparations of winning this trophy as completing the project that they set out to achieve last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very smart because there's no sort of letdown period.
No.
You have the teams that have qualified for next year's Champions League. You can prepare. You have the advanced team time to prepare for your immediate opponents, Colorado.
Yeah.
Surely the most formidable team in the set.
By the end of the transfer window, it could be.
But also, you can look at, you have all of those teams to put up on your board. You have tangible goals to work towards. Losing focus is the most dangerous thing for a team like that at this point. And setting an early season goal, or setting a goal like getting into the Champions League and attempting to win it,
yeah,
is is, I think, the smartest method possible. What would you like to see? What's your resolution for Toronto in 2018?
I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of a Toronto FC supporter. A big one would be re-sign Bedeschere.
That's allowed.
But I agree. I think keep the foot on the gas. I think their star players seem very content, very happy. But you need to keep them aiming for something else and not to rest on their laurels.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. I hadn't really thought about it, but I think the Champions League focus is a good thing to have because they have nothing to lose by pursuing it. I personally think they will get destroyed, as most clubs do, by Mexican sides once they get there. However, it gives them something to focus on outside of that. If I'm a Canadian soccer fan, my resolution would be bring up some more academy products, and I want to see more youth products coming through the system.
Mm-hmm.
And something a little different from Toronto. We've seen how versatile they can be, but they rely very heavily on a few key players. That doesn't mean they can't perform without them. But I'd like to see... I'm less interested in the Altidore, Giovinco, Bradley contributions next season. I'm interested to see who can they... And by that stretch, even Bedeschere, who can they start to bring through the ranks that's different and exciting? Which, with the trade of Raheem Edwards, that's, to me, kind of a vacancy. They've aged out a lot of their players, and a lot of their star players are older, slash in their prime.
Yeah.
But who's the exciting new talent in Toronto? And as of right now, aside from Bono, I don't feel like they have that. So to me, to keep the excitement, I would rather see Toronto sacrifice another MLS Cup and in the service of finding some exciting new talent to play a little bit more. Maybe they lose a few games, but right now I don't feel like there's a lot of prospect in Toronto. They have a great squad, but I'd like to see some more of some youth talent coming up through the team. And by youth, I mean like the 22, 23-year-old players that are not big signings, but just given an opportunity to play. It's splitting hairs. Like, it's the best ever in MLS. But I'd like to see that.
I think that the biggest pitfall that you have when going to the finals is retaining your focus the next year.
Yeah.
They did it. They did it last year. They were able to retain
their focus. They did everything this year.
They should hopefully have a repeat performance of that, because to have the same team fall apart would be very disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that beyond success this year in attempting to defend MLS Cup and win more trophies, get them, I don't necessarily think that I do kind of subscribe, if you're in your window, win them while you got the chance.
Sure.
However, I think that Toronto can really look at LA Galaxy as an example,
mm-hmm.
Of maybe what not to do, or how not, or how to maintain your dynasty.
Or Manchester United.
How to train your dynasty.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's the thing, is they could come in and have another great season, but I'm also sort of looking to like 2019,
mm-hmm.
of, you know, they're likely not going to keep all of those four or five players that are in their mid to late 30s, mm-hmm. not late 30s, but, you know, early to mid 30s that are going to move elsewhere or retire.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you don't have a club anymore. Not the club that's going to win you championships anyway. Especially with the fact that as fans and as commentators and as coaches sometimes forget, every team gets better in MLS every season. And so it's easy to say, well, we just keep things the same. We don't change anything. For me, Toronto has to be able to be bringing up some more prospects so that when Giovinco Altidore is gone,
mm-hmm.
they have serviceable replacements, which they've had, but those have been in the form of largely players with a lot of age and experience.
You look at LA, and they have the scenario where they it's been so long putting the team together. And then Beckham leaves, and it's like, oh, we've got Jovinko and Keane. Mm-hmm. And Giovanni Dos Santos.
Which they coasted on, and it sort of almost worked a little bit.
And then they lose one of them, and they got, well, we got the other two. And then they lose the second one, and they're like, well, we got the third one. And then all of a sudden it's like,
you've just got Cole running up and down the pitch. Without a clue.
Yes. So I think that there are some lessons to learn there. For Montreal, what would you like to see?
Atiba Hutchinson.
That's your resolution, sign Atiba Hutchinson.
I think Montreal is not yet seen, or at least this season didn't see the rewards of the work that they've put in. I don't think they actually need to change that much. I think they've made good off-season changes. They're still missing something. They're missing a little bit of a spark. Expecting Piatti to do everything at his age is a very tall order. To me, they're doing the thing that I said about Toronto, that Toronto should be doing, but they're lacking the Toronto pieces. I think they need a younger midfield talisman, and also a defensive mid that can do a little bit more to hold things at the back. But they really do need a 25, 26-year-old striker who can get the job done. Possibly two of them. But I think that they're set up well as a club, and maybe the results don't necessarily show it. But I don't think it's a system you want to deviate too much from, because I think they have a good system going.
Yeah.
And they're bringing up a lot of academy products in a very short period of time. I think they need to stick to their guns, but add a couple of other pieces that help take the pressure off of players like Piatti.
My resolution would be achieve inner peace. I think that losing a head coach in Mauro Biello shows that there was, you're right, they've got the pieces, but they weren't able to put it together. So now you have a new manager.
Yeah.
And I still point to that, like, Montreal could have made the playoffs. They didn't make the playoffs. The saga with signing Piatti and whether or not Piatti was going to be signed rather than whether or not they should have backed the dump truck full of money to his house and just been done with it. There's going to be a lot of change this offseason with the manager switching. So the goal, what you've got to do in the off season is figure out what you're doing going forward and have the plan going into the season, and then don't fuck around with it.
Yeah.
Don't leave people guessing what's happening, who's staying, who's going, who's getting fired, who's not getting fired.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that because they have a good system set up, they also need to try to retain as much of that core as they can. And I actually think that core is in their younger players, not their older players.
They got Raheem Edwards?
Yeah. And there you go. Like, I think they are trying to build something for the future rather than just build it for, can we win MLS Cup next year? I think that's a great focus to have. The worst thing they could do right now is panic. They're not a team that needs to panic. They have a great team. They've already made some good moves. And now they've got some money in their pocket as well. But don't panic. They're a good team. To me, they're one of the more disciplined teams to watch defensively.
Yeah.
They're missing some attacking pieces for sure. I don't think that means they need to go and spend a ton of money on a striker. But, I agree. It's sort of like, just stay calm, maintain your discipline, add the pieces that you need. But don't clear the decks. Don't start over, because you have the basis of a really good MLS squad. And it's MLS. Year to year, you can be second and then you can be 10th. And you're going to bounce around. But I think if you focus solely on that, you could be kind of screwed. For me, SKC is a good example of a team that did fantastically well all season, really did nothing in the playoffs, and ultimately, if they don't find a striker, I think next season could be bottom of the table. like, for as good as they are.
My good, close, personal friend, Tim Healy, deserves more.
He does indeed. Okay, let's take it home. New Year's resolutions for the Vancouver Whitecaps. There's been a lot of trades happening. I think we've covered them all now for the team. There's still a couple of things in limbo. But if you took out rumors and what could or should or might happen with the current existing squad, if you were the manager and you were thinking, what piece is missing? You know, they had a good season. They recovered well from a pretty terrible season. Some pieces were added. But what do you think is missing? What resolutions would you have for the Whitecaps?
I was listening when you were saying earlier about, like, you know, viewing it through the supporters' shoes for a second. And I think that the expectations, I think that it's been a lot harder for Whitecaps fans to enjoy this season that was a pretty successful season compared to the year before because things fluctuated so much because there was... You know, that early season before Jordy Reyna debuted where it was like, trust me, this guy will come and everything will be better. And that seemed like such a cop-out.
Yeah.
But it happened, and it was.
Yeah.
And then so all of a sudden, the expectations throughout the course of the season changed. Not from the club, because the manager, I think, was pretty consistent throughout the season in what they were saying. But I think that Whitecaps fans talked themselves out of a good time.
I agree, and I think I was one of those fans. I think that's a fair assessment. Yeah.
I mean, the club needs to show more. Certainly the club needs to show more ambition. The use of, this would be my New Year's resolution, is to sign two more DPs and to fill... to fill the designated player slots with honest-to-God designated players. Mm-hmm. So I know I just said that, you know, don't complain so much, and then I'm going to pick up the number one and go with that.
What's the lad's name that we just signed from West Ham?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
I'm sorry.
I don't remember him either.
Look it up. Which a lot of people have kind of been like, why are we signing this person? Like, what's the point? And to me, it's the point of a player, regardless of how much time he's spent at West Ham, which is hardly a European giant, is still a very different pedigree.
Otherwise, he's still closer to championship level.
Daniel Henry?
Oh, yes! Daniel Henry. I don't think he gets...
It's not French, it's just Daniel Henry.
I don't think he gets the Wenger H, but if...
Henry.
The Henry H. I'm thinking Wenger, but I don't think he gets the Henry H, although I'm sure a lot of...
Daniel Henry, maybe perhaps the correct Ontario pronunciation of that particular name.
Perhaps people who remembered his time at Toronto FC will hasten to remind me.
Daniel Henry?
But it's true. You put together good pieces. The Whitecaps did a good job of creating a locker room environment that was, you know, that was cohesive to my... It didn't have the same recrimination that it had in the why don't you fight like that on Sundays era of the locker room in the previous season. So adding a player who... I know a lot of people...
I think it was Saturday. Sunday.
Saturday.
I don't think you're supposed to fight on this.
That's right.
But Sunday too. It's MLS, so that does check out. Why don't you fight like that on a Tuesday afternoon?
at 4 p.m. 4 p.m. at 12. At 12 Pacific, 3 Eastern, so that it can be on NBC. It's a lot nicer now. They did a good job of making it a happier place to be. You hear this all the time from players when they've just arrived and they see how collegiate the place is now. Daniel Henry himself, I think. I remember back when Pamadou Ka was signed from Portland. A lot of people had a reaction.
Yeah.
It's unfair.
Yeah.
There's just no good way of getting around it, which is to say...
Super unfair.
I didn't like that defender at another team. I thought that that defender's presence on the other team was positive because they did badly, and it was a positive for us that they were on the team. And that was my primary method of relating to this player.
Yeah.
And now they're on my team, and I don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
Perez,
Pamutaka.
I think that this is an issue with Henry, and he's had some injury issues. People stick to that. People wonder if he is really just that good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Having another Canadian player on the team who wants to work to make themselves better, a la De Jong, I think can only help.
Yeah, and I like Robinson's assessment of it. It's like, he's got everything to prove. He's a player that's played at top levels, but has also really struggled with injuries and struggled for minutes. That's great. That is exactly the type of player. If you're talking about value for money, you've got a great pedigree in terms of training, and you have a player with something to prove. That's a fantastic combination. Now, it could crash and burn, but it's also not costing a huge amount of money to do. And you go, we've got Weston and Parker. We know what they can do together, but we also know their weaknesses, and we need competition.
Weston will be absent for the 2018 FIFA World Cup as well.
Right. And, you know, as of now, I think we still have... dude from Real Salt Lake.
Mond.
Aaron Mond.
Yes.
Who I had early glimpses of seems great and needs also a chance. I'm all about it. I love Waston. I love Parker. You need competition. And as much as people are looking at Henry and being like, you know, it was West Ham, but he's been loaned out and he's had injuries, I still think, like, great. And again, if he crashes and burns, okay. Nothing lost to the team. But I would much rather see him come in and succeed. And which we had with Waston. Waston struggled when he came to the squad. Osted struggled when he came into the squad.
Absolutely.
Tim Parker struggled last year in his sophomore year. I mean, he had a great rookie season, but we've also seen that Parker is prone to errors and maybe needs a bit of competition behind him. There was no way, even without the shit off the field, that Nowinski should have been the starting right back. But he took his chance and really took his chance. That's what you want in a team. My New Year's resolution for the Whitecaps is to keep that system going. Don't rely on star players as much as that's what people are going to cry for. Have competition in all places. A team where the breakout young starlet, Alphonso Davies, doesn't seem to have a place, to me, is a good team. You want the star players to be fighting for minutes, and it's up to them to find the opportunity and take it, rather than clear deck and hope for the best and throw them in. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And that's where I think maybe the Breck Shea thing makes a lot of sense. You've got Alphonso Davies and you've got Breck Shea, two very different players, two very different ages and levels of experience, but they're challenging each other for minutes.
Yeah.
That's all right. What you don't want to run into is a situation where you have only one player who can play that position, and that's it. For Toronto, I think it's Michael Bradley. There really is no out-and-out replacement for him. You can do without Altidore. You can do without Giovinco. You can do without both. But if you don't have that through line, especially from your back four, or in Toronto's case, sometimes a back five, to Michael Bradley, to your forwards, it all breaks down. My resolution for the Whitecaps is don't tinker with it too much, and it seems like that's what they're doing.
Tinkering or not tinkering?
Not tinkering. I so wish that things had ended differently for Osted, but I'm just going to side with Osted and say I'm going to focus all my energy on him finding a good club, and I really hope he stays in MLS, because, again, I can't wait for him coming back to BC Place, where I know he'll have a standing ovation for him, and he'll have his name chanted if he's stopping penalties us against him.
Oh man, that would break my damn heart.
I don't think it would. I don't know. Am I just too amicable?
It would be good. No, but it would make me sad. It would not make me sad because I'm sad that he did well. It would make me sad because I...
Yeah.
You know, because there's no better revenge.
Absolutely.
In the meantime, before he lands the club, tomorrow we're going to... Or as we record this tomorrow, we're going to see the schedule come out.
That's right.
In what appears to be... A crazy... They're doing a schedule reveal show. Which you'll probably be able to see by the time this comes out. It'll probably have already happened. But they're going to have a 45-minute show where they talk about bits and pieces of the schedule.
Why?
And then at the end of the show, the full schedule will be posted online.
Okay. And I've seen some snarky comments from actual team accounts today on Twitter about this, but, like, why are people so interested in this? Does it really matter?
People want to know, and I want to know when I can... I want, like, for me, it does kind of mean travel plans, because I don't live in Vancouver.
That's fair.
But it's true that MLS does try to do a lot to gin up the interest in terms of rivalry week and what have you.
Yeah, I'm kind of like... I mean, maybe it's just from being a Whitecaps supporter, but, like, I give a shit about who we play first or who we play last. I'm sort of like...
There are slightly...
Let's get into it. I just want the games to start. I'm actually more concerned about the preseason. I had a moment where I was like, Honolulu is the worst place I've ever been to in my life, outside of Regina. I'm sorry, Regina, but it's where dreams go to die. And I honestly thought about buying a ticket to Honolulu to watch some of the preseason of the Whitecaps. I was more excited about that than the opening game. I was like, we're playing Montreal Impact. I'm like, all right, fine. Like, what? You're going to play all the teams numerous times. The travel schedule is ridiculous. What? I guess I'm wondering, like, why does it really matter? Like, what would be the result that you'd be like, oh, well, that's exciting.
I think when I look at a schedule, this is, I think, an issue with the unbalanced schedule, is that there are too many rivalry games with your rivalry teams. Because when I look at the... I haven't done it recently, but when they have the big schedule announced for Tottenham, I would always look up, when are the Arsenal games? Because there's only two of them. What are the games around Boxing Day? What games open and close the season? In MLS, the last game of the season does matter, but there's no mid-season point of interest to hang your head around. And there's also no... and you don't need to... It's like when you're in it on a week-to-week basis in the Premier League, as I was when I'm describing this mentality. It's like you want to know... Like, when those two games are to shape, like, you know, what seasons they're going to be in, right? Are they going to be in fall? Is it going to be a winter? Like, when do I have to, when am I going to get amped for this? And it's like, in the Whitecaps' case, there are only one or two, there are one game each against Toronto and Montreal. But if the biggest rivalry is against Seattle and Portland, you play them 18,000 times.
Exactly. And that's where I'm like, I don't care. Like, we play Seattle in the second week. Like, yeah, we're going to play them like four or five times. So, okay, so we lose one, we tie it. Like, of course I want to win every single game, but it's MLS. Like, I don't know. We'll be fine.
I'm hoping for a game on my birthday.
I think, I actually, I was very excited that going to test my memory. I might have to edit this out. But last season, I know we finished with Portland in the postseason because they blew us out of the water. But I'm sort of glad it was like a good, feisty, cascading
match.
Wasn't
it also the last regular season game, too?
It was, yeah. Yeah. And then this season, I think we ended with Portland again?
I'm pretty sure this season was Portland.
Yeah.
Last season, we did make the playoffs, and I don't remember who the last game was. This year was... Portland, and then...
I just don't want the end of the season being a season ticket holder. I'm going to go to the last game, but I don't want it to be against, like, Philadelphia Union.
Mm-hmm. That's good. And I think they do a pretty good job. They do a pretty good job of that, I think, of making the Canadian team game at or near the season opener.
Yeah.
Making one of the Cascadia games the last game of the season, because I know we've closed against Portland and Seattle before because I've been in some of those.
Yeah. And I'm super glad to not be opening against Toronto for a variety of reasons, mostly out of tiredness.
Oh,
I wouldn't even care if Toronto won it. I'm just so tired of playing Toronto in our season opener.
I was at the TFC season, the Whitecaps TFC season opener where somebody flipped off Altidore, which was great, and where Jay DeMeritt was injured for the whole season, which was not great, and I kind of have negative feelings and emotions about that.
Yeah, that's all right. We don't need to repeat that. We're good. Let's put a pin in that for a couple of seasons.
And as a traveling, like, as somebody that will try to go to as many Whitecaps games on the East Coast as possible,
mm-hmm.
I already know where the locations are going to be because, again, of the unbalanced schedule.
Mm-hmm.
That means that I know there's not going to be a game in Montreal. I know there is going to be a game in Toronto. I know they're not going to play the Red Bulls in New York.
Mm-hmm.
I know they are going to play City in New York. So, I know they're not, like, New England is the closest market, and I know they're not going there.
Yeah.
So it's like a lot of the big questions are already answered.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and it is tough for a league that is so widespread. Like, I mean, I don't feel like MLS deserves all the flack for like, well, it's an insane schedule. Like, it's a real fucking big place, man. Yeah, in Europe it's a little bit easier if you're just driving a bus down or you need to fly your team over to Paris in 45 minutes. But, like, mm-hmm. North America, sure. Even flying to Orlando mm-hmm. is a big deal if there's even so much as a 5-hour delay.
Mm-hmm. It's all happening, though. The Honolulu tournament is coming up. Whitecaps will play a team in the Japanese 7th Division.
Yeah.
They have the opening game against they open in the Las Vegas Lights Stadium.
Yeah.
And then the Impact come next week, and I'm like, man, that would be a great preseason tournament. If they had the Impact and Vancouver and Las Vegas and there's one other team, I think, maybe Colorado that's doing or Columbus that's doing a preseason friendly there. It's like, do that all on, don't do that in 4 consecutive weeks. Do that in 1 weekend.
Yeah.
I'm
unsure about this Honolulu tournament against, like, sort of 2nd to 7th tier Japanese sides.
One of them, I think, is a J League 2, and then the other one is the weird 7th Division 1.
Yeah. I mean, and I get shaking things up a bit. And I know mm-hmm. they're also then going down to LA, to California, mm-hmm. combine thing. And, I mean, again, just, you do want your players to play games and just get back into it, and it doesn't hurt to be playing against not great sides. I think we also saw the results of playing in Wales against some actually pretty good sides, as much as people are like, oh, it's a youth side, or it's a second-tier side. It was a different level of competitiveness and physicality that I felt like did prepare the Whitecaps to play as many games as they had to in the first 3 months.
True.
My hope
isolating
is...
isolating them in the countryside of Wales.
Yeah.
The old team.
Yeah, and I mean, I hope that it's the same in Honolulu. I also am fully on board for just team-building activities, and it's going to be a slightly different squad, so sure, but...
Maybe that's what you can do for next week. Next week, come up with some good team-building activities that the Whitecaps can do. If you have any suggestions, please get a hold of us at That's MLS on Twitter.
Yeah, do that. Send them our way. Where can we find you online, good sir?
You can find me at Team Bates, www.team-bates.com, and whatahowler.com, where issue 14 is slowly winding its way to the stands.
Beautiful. Great.
And where could we find you online, other than...
Shit posting at That's So MLS on Twitter. That's about it. We have a Facebook page now. We haven't updated it recently, but Facebook keeps telling me we should do more stuff on it, so maybe we'll do that.
Go check that out, and also please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes and the podcast listening device of your choice.
Do that.
Whether you listen on iTunes or Stitcher or the recording device that you've placed in Nick's home.
And until next time, keep your hands and arms in a natural position when defending in the box.
Will do.